Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking about the Group Study Exchange Program of Rotary International. I'd like now to welcome Georgia Smith. She's the executive director of the Horse Shelter, which is having a benefit this coming Saturday, September 12th. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So the Horse Shelter takes in abused, abandoned, neglected horses here in this great ranching horsey state of New Mexico.
We do. We only accept horses from law enforcement, meaning the New Mexico Livestock Board, the sheriff, or animal control.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? How do these animals come to them?
Often they find out about them themselves, or we field calls and complaints about them and then contact the Livestock Board. We don't have the authority to seize an animal. We're simply a sanctuary, a place for them to come to when they're rescued, hopefully be rehabbed, and then ultimately adopted out.
So unlike the very wonderful animal hospice down the street from you, the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary, mm-hmm. which really takes in animals, including there's a couple of horses there, who are going to spend their last years. This is really about rehabilitating horses so that they can go on and have happy lives.
Absolutely. We hope so. But we're prepared and willing to keep an animal as long as it takes, and that could be years, its entire life. What people sometimes don't understand is that we will not accept a surrender. If you
right.
simply can't afford your animal, or just your life circumstances change, or the animal's injured, there are other shelters in the state that do that, and all of the licensed shelters are on the New Mexico Livestock Board website. I think there are five or six, and we're just not set up for that. We are trying to serve the lowest rung on the ladder, and that's why ours comes strictly through essentially law enforcement agencies.
So you've got what? 35 or so horses?
35, yeah.
Tell us some of their stories.
Oh, they're amazing. I just this morning took an orphan filly from Gallup for her first, essentially, pedicure. She was born, we think, around April 7th. Her mom lived about a week or 10 days. She was taken to McKinley County Humane, where a colleague of mine, really, her job is to rescue small animals, but because she's a horse person, people bring her horses, too. And we sometimes end up with them, and this one we agreed to take. And she's been with us since May 16th, I think. And she's doing really well. She was severely malnourished. She probably had, and hopefully has resolved, an ulcer problem. She was on ulcer medication for a month. She got her first shots 2 weeks ago, and then her first foot trimming today, which was a big occasion for us. We took her to the vet, and the farrier met us there, and we x-rayed her feet to make sure they were all right, and then started working on them just a tiny bit, you know, a little bit at a time. And she did beautifully. And she is the one I had told you about who has a foster mom, which is good because they have to socialize. They can't just grow up thinking they're four-legged humans, which is what would happen.
Is that right?
Yeah, because we feed her formula. You know, she's just getting weaned off her formula right now.
So a foster horse mother knows what to do.
It's a rare commodity, I have to say. This mare even lets her nurse. There's no milk, but she lets her nurse. And by chance, we had a biological baby a month or so after we got this one. And so it's really good because she has a friend and another mother, and they eat and sleep together, but they play. I mean, they eat and sleep separately, excuse me, but they play together all day, which is great.
So horses are social creatures, as probably all mammals are, to a greater or lesser extent. What are some of their social needs?
Well, it's really important, and in terms of our adoption screening, we won't, for example, adopt a horse into a single horse setting. You already have to have a horse. You also have to have a relationship established or have one in the works with a vet and a farrier, and we require references. I actually do a site inspection, and we do follow up. I mean, we're really quite strict about it. We've been lucky since I came. We've adopted out 16 horses, which is really very lucky and kind of miraculous, to be honest with you.
What kind of owners take them?
Different situations. I mean, the first call was for a woman who needed a companion. She'd lost an older horse and wanted a companion for her existing older horse. That was easy for us. We have plenty of companion animals.
Yeah.
We have adopted out three young horses that were born or brought in as weanlings last year. And some of the mothers we've also adopted out. A number of them have been rideable. We started last year with sending horses off to an off-site trainer, and it's been very helpful. And we've screened horses, because often they come and we have to assume they really know nothing and start over. And, you know, sometimes you get to sort of a plateau, and sometimes you realize, well, they actually do have a lot of experience and know what's going on. And so because last year we took in 08, 28 animals and adopted out only six, we had quite an inventory there. And it's kind of a feast or famine situation. You adopt a horse or two, and then there's a long lag time, and then another one comes up.
Right.
But it's actually not a bad idea to get a shelter animal. It's totally different from a situation of a horse trader and not knowing what you're getting. We're the opposite. We want you to know. I put you in touch with the vet. We also will take the horse back if the situation doesn't work. So it's kind of an easy transition, though we screen you.
What are some of the stories of the horses who have come in? I mean, abuse, neglect, do you get animals that actually have been hit?
Yeah, we have two right now that came in a group of four that were on court hold before I came to the shelter from the Las Vegas area. And we're quite sure that they were physically abused. They have, you know, serious trust issues. For example, one of them, it's very difficult for her to handle her ears being touched. Another one we have, the other one from this sort of family situation, we have a really hard time having her feet trimmed, just what we did with the baby today.
And so those are clues to what might have happened to the animal before.
Oh, yeah, and they're very shy. They're very wary of people. They're very difficult to catch. They don't want to be crowded in a spay. You know, everything that sort of normal horse behavior about fear is just exacerbated.
Right. Now, it's a lot like a scared puppy or kitten, really.
Yeah. Just big.
Just really big. And so the process of, what would you call it, taming them or socializing them or getting them back to kind of normal responses, that's a big
yeah,
process.
It takes a long time. We're required, and we do it anyway, for them to be quarantined for 30 days. Sometimes they're housed off-site. We had a horse that had lice, for example, and a local vet let me keep it at the clinic while I treated it before we brought it into our population, because we certainly didn't want that going on. And we quarantine the animals in separate pens and separate housing for a minimum of 30 days before they're acclimated and into the group. And what's interesting, we have, I think I just counted them, 19 really large paddocks. And it's like a giant chess game. Who can get along with whom? Who needs similar nutritional situation? It's fascinating to watch how they get along. And sometimes two or three will get along that you'd never imagine could be friends, and some you think would be a perfect match, or no way, you have to pull them apart immediately. So it's kind of fun.
That's so interesting. What can you tell what's going on? Like one horse just takes a dislike to another the way one human would to another?
They can, absolutely, yeah. And there's an elderly horse there. His name is Patron, appropriately enough, that's been there a really long time and has outlived a number of his companions. And just really through guesswork, we put a mare with him, and it was like instant bonding, and almost a little too much so, to be honest with you. Now I think we would have a really hard time separating them, but it's very good to see horses that are that happy together.
So when they're that happy together and it comes time to adopt one of them out, what do you
yeah.
do? You say,
well, usually we put another one in for, you know, so that nobody's left alone.
Right.
The horse that's sort of our poster child for definite abuse, the horse named Miracle, who was shot last year in Las Cruces. We got her through the Doña Ana County Sheriff. There's a woman sheriff there who's very active in animal welfare issues, not just horses. And when she came, she had had, she'd been shot and abandoned. She'd been rescued, surgery, rehab, and foster care for 6 months, and then they needed a place for her to live. And we took her in December, and the care that was given to her was absolutely amazing. What I'm proud we've been able to accomplish is she socialized again. When she came, she was too shy and withdrawn to eat with other horses, and now she lives with two horses, and she's the boss. And she's gained a little weight. I don't want her to gain any more because she has arthritis issues. But you can see real transformations in pretty quick order.
We're talking to Georgia Smith of the Horse Shelter, which is just south of Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm. Almost to the village of Cerrillos.
So how did you get into this work?
Well, I have a rescued horse myself. And through her, in a very long story, I got involved with therapeutic riding. And some of my volunteers at Las Campanas are on the board of the horse shelter. And they told me they had last year raised enough money to hire a director and asked me, was I interested? And I was the director of a community nonprofit in northern New Mexico. And I said, well, I really like my job, and I don't think so. And then I waited a few weeks, and I said, yeah, I think I'd like to come out and see it. Maybe I am interested. And that was last fall. I started November 4th.
Tell us more about therapeutic, was it
therapeutic riding?
Yeah.
I'm certified through North American Riding for the Handicap. I teach special needs. I always say kids. I have had two students older than I, 153 and 184. My youngest one is really small. She's 2.5. And they really learn to ride. It's not a pony ride that they're just led around, but it's incredibly volunteer intensive, as is the horse shelter. It's interesting, these two things require so much attendance and so much attention, because usually when we start out with a student, it's sometimes a parent to begin with, depending on the child's issues, and at least two volunteers, sometimes three. So it's intense. And Las Campanas donated the facility, which is really top notch, and their lesson and trail string of horses. So it's a great situation. And a couple who live there, Lawrence and Susanna Becerra, founded a 501c3 and funded a 501c3. And so the lessons are subsidized, which is cool because special needs families have enough issues just in terms of time and transportation.
Right.
Yeah, that's hard enough.
Now, what are some of the actual special needs that you see coming in to learn to ride?
Oh, well, we have two students with cerebral palsy. And Lawrence and Susanna purchased an amazing saddle that has sort of a chair back on it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's called the Independent Saddle, and we've seen such a change in these two young men in terms of exactly that, self-esteem and, you know, knowing they can do something on their own.
Now, that's a psychological piece. Is there also like a physical coordination piece
Absolutely.
That comes into it?
Yeah, because the horse's movement when they walk, which is mostly, I mean, we almost all our kids trot. No one canters.
Yeah.
But the walk especially mimics your gait. And so it's very good for them with that. We had a woman, an adult woman with MS, who could walk better when she got off than she could the rest of the day or the week.
Unlike the rest of us, who when we get off a horse,
yeah, you're sore. We have some of that too. We have a number of students with Down syndrome, a lot of children who are autistic. It's a wide range. We had the older man had a hip replacement. He was a very good rider, very experienced rider, and just needed some help getting back on and mounting, and now he told me he's graduated and didn't need me anymore, which I was flattered, and he's off riding his own horse now. It's
oh
great.
My goodness, that's
yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah.
I was just listening to an interview with Temple Grandin the other day, the autistic woman who has done so much animal welfare work, including in livestock and
slaughterhouses
and things
absolutely.
Like that. But one of the things that's amazing, I read a long article about her many years ago, was that when she was growing up, she as an autistic person, she related more to cows than to other people.
Yeah, and I can understand that. And she's very visual too. I've read a bunch of her books myself. And the way that she talks about one of the books, Thinking in Pictures, the way she... it's not imagining. I mean, it's really visualizing things. She tries to visualize it the way the animal might. So it's like the utmost, since there's not, you know, a spoken language that we can speak at least. I think she's onto something. Let me just say that way.
Well, when you have autistic youngsters riding horses, do you see some of that connection?
Yeah. And we do try to encourage verbalization with all the students that are not that verbal, because it's a great experience for them. And we have two new children who just have socialization and attachment issues, and they, you know, we're so happy. They've only been about six times, and they'll already go with me. They'll already get on the horse. They're already talking. And that's something that their parents, you know, really struggle with, having a situation in which the child can develop and have a good time and learn to do something at the same time. And something that's really, it's a big deal to get on a horse. You don't, for the most part, know how to ride. It's a big deal even if you do sometimes.
So that's the therapeutic riding piece. Back to the horse shelter. Because that's not the work of the horse shelter. That takes place at a different location.
No, totally
separate.
Totally separate.
So you have these 35 horses. Is that your maximum capacity?
No. We have had, since I've been there, a pretty scary day. We had 48. We thought seven more were coming. And I was a little nervous, I have to be honest with you. We have a lot of land. We're using between 50 and 80 acres, depending upon the paddocks right now. We have access to over 300, which is just unheard of in the shelter rescue situation. Most of the time that works for us. Sometimes it works against us because our paddocks are so big. If there's a hard-to-catch horse, it's really hard to catch with that much room. But the APNM, Animal Protection of New Mexico, which is the... there's Animal Protection Voters and Animal Protection of New Mexico, and they recently did a survey because they're trying to secure funding for something called the Equine Protection Fund, and they ask us just that question about capacity, and our president thinks that we could probably handle 70 if we had a lot more money and a little time to do fencing and get more staff. In terms of our land, we could probably house over 100, but we're certainly not there. You know, please don't bring us 100 horses tomorrow.
Well, people can't bring them anyway.
No.
They have to come through those channels.
Yeah.
So horses evolved doing whatever horses do, and then they're really domesticated by humans and have been for a really long time.
Yeah.
Under what circumstances are, I mean, I guess, and there's different kinds of horses, just as there's different kinds of dogs who... You know, a dachshund is happy taking a little walk a day, and a terrier needs to run, you know, 20 miles a day or whatever. But what makes horses happy? Like, if you could design a perfect happy life and fulfilled life for a horse.
Well, you know, for the shelter horses, I think obviously a lack of fear, you know, that someone was going to hurt them or just be rough with them. And I think just knowing that things are consistent, they really, really like routine. They know what time it is. It's time to eat. It's the, you know, the sun's up, it's time to eat. It's time to go do this. It's time to go do that. They know our volunteers. I mean, they don't know the day of the week or anything, but they know when a person approaches them what might be in store. That's a good thing.
Right.
So they love that. And they had, you know, we talked about them being gregarious and herd animals before. They like that too. I mean, they're very, and I think these horses especially, we want them to develop attachments. They need that. We have a few that are a little bit unattached, but for the most part, they thrive on company. And they like humans.
With each other and with humans.
Yes, absolutely, both. Absolutely.
They must have a great need to run, too.
They do. None of ours are cooped up at all. They really have a lot of room. Some of them don't run a lot because they're older. Some of them, it's just not their temperament, you know, to play. But they certainly have plenty of room. And the good thing about it is we're on sort of a rolling terrain. So from where they're fed to where their water is, you know, even if it's just a slow walk, like you're saying, would be appropriate for a certain dog or a certain person, it's appropriate for a certain animal, a certain horse.
Occasionally, you will get an animal, or after a while, you will find with an animal that it does not have the capacity to live a happy life. And it needs to be put down.
Yeah, we just went through two young horses. Both of our vets, Pecos Valley vet Mike Callahan and Doug Fall, and I and our board, we have a quality of life committee, had talked about these two young horses. And then the state vet from New Mexico Livestock Board, Dave Fly, came out to inspect us. And after doing the facility check and sort of talking about types of intake to help me, he asked me if I had any questions, and we talked about these two young horses, one that probably had a congenital spinal problem and neurological deficits for sure, and another that had kind of three more obvious but potentially chronic problems. And he told me that they were merely maintaining themselves, and they weren't safe for volunteers. They certainly weren't safe to be adopted out. And I couldn't mix them in with another horse. One of them couldn't be on hard ground. I mean, there were all of these quite complicated situations. And the one with the congenital problem, it's called getting cast. They get down and get up against something and can't get up. It's usually in a stall or a trailer or against a fence. She got cast in this most shallow indentation in the ground.
Yeah.
And it was horrifying to see. And so when I discussed it with him, and I went back to our committee and to our vets, and we decided to put them down. It was really hard. And I never in my life thought that I would suggest to euthanize such a young animal. But when you're looking at trying to serve a collective of 35 animals, and those horses could live 20 years of unhappiness, we felt it was the more humane thing to do. And
it must be hard. In any
it was case. Awful, I have to say. It was awful. And our volunteers, you know, I was attached to them because they had been mostly quarantined there and restricted from volunteer activity. But, you know, everybody kind of goes with it. And on the same day, we palpated a mare for a pregnancy check. So, you know, you see the cycle just immediately. You just take a deep breath, turn around, and we're starting over again.
Cycles
so it was
of life,
okay.
Life and,
yeah,
and
it was,
renewal.
It was somehow reassuring that it was okay.
We're talking to Georgia Smith. She's executive director of the Horse Shelter here in just south of Santa Fe. So when you work in animal welfare, and we do quite a number of animal programs on the Radio Cafe, you have to somehow learn to live with just continual pain and suffering of these creatures who on some level are helpless.
Yeah, that, but also, I mean, there's a joy part of it too. I mean, taking this baby today and having the vet say how good she looked, and, you know, it was sort of an adventure, you know, for all of us. And to have horses go out and we hear back from the people who have adopted them, I mean, there's definitely both sides of it. And what we were talking about earlier in terms of coming to the shelter, we right now have four animals who are underweight. They're quite elderly. They have dental issues because their teeth wear down, and we feed them a complete sort of, like, it's not oatmeal, but, you know, it's like a pavlov.
It's like mush.
Them. Yeah, it's equine senior soaked. And but they're happy, and the horse with the strong attachment to the mare is one of those elderly horses who's skinny, but you can look at him and you know he's fine, you know. So it's not a depressing or scary or, you know, downbeat place to be. And they, the horses, you know, they seem content there. They seem happy in their groups.
Do you have enough volunteers who are experienced enough with horses that they can really work with them?
You know, we always need volunteers. We have a horse handler who's there 15 hours a week. She's great. And I get the volunteers sort of introduced to the situation, and they learn. They work with our off-site trainer. They work with each other. They work with Susan, our handler. And, you know, it's pretty basic stuff. As long as you're paying attention, you're okay. And that would be the same with any horse. A shelter's horse is not different from that. It would be the same with a therapy horse. You need to watch what you're doing.
Right.
even to get your toe stepped on, you know.
If anybody wants to volunteer, I guess they can go to thehorseshelter.org and get in touch with you and so on.
Absolutely. There's even a volunteer application on there. And then I just ask that they come out and meet me or meet Susan or an experienced volunteer, kind of be shown around. And then we have a great group. A lot of retired people come during the week, and then younger working people come on the weekends. And we have a committed group, you know, probably 20 or 30 people that are there every single week on a given day doing either a given thing or something special, you know, that we've asked them to do. We have a great group.
So the benefit is coming up. It's called the Equine Gala.
It is. We were approached by Terry Flanagan and Lauren Ogden of Avalon Dressage if they wanted to do a benefit for us. And we're like, yeah. Are you kidding? Yes, we'd love it. And they've got a great program. There'll be Icelandic ponies there. There's a German woman, Ulla Hudson, who lives in Edgewood, who's bringing ponies up. The vaulting group from Corrales is coming. A very good trainer, Leslie Hamilturk from Las Vegas, is coming. She's a very good Western rider. I mean, it's a horse from the shelter, Jan B., the first baby born at the shelter. We'll be there with our off-site trainer. So it's very cross-disciplinary. And Luna Rosa, Equestrian Center, Luann Sargent, is hosting it.
So it's really horses. It's not just sitting around sipping mixed
drinks.
No,
it's a performance. No, it's horse. It'll be fun, I think.
And so that's on Saturday, the 12th of September.
Right.
And again, for more information on that, you can go to thehorseshelter.org.
Right.
Is there a phone number over there at which people can reach somebody?
Sure, 505-471-6179.
Georgia Smith is the executive director of The Horse Shelter. Anything else you want to let people know?
No, just come to the gala and come out and see the horses at the shelter.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm very happy now to welcome Donna Padacci. She is the district chair for the Group Study Exchange Program of Rotary International, and Guadalupe Goler, who is a member of the Santa Fe Rotary Club and the leader of last year's exchange program. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hello. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Nice to be here.
So this is a program whose deadline is coming up, and we'll be talking about that in a second, for young professionals aged 25 to 40, and it's a real exchange between the United States and the country that is chosen that year. How does it work?
That is correct. Each year, our Rotary District, which includes all of New Mexico and Western Texas, chooses to exchange a team of people with another country. This coming year, from April to May of 2010, we're going to be exchanging with the Philippines. And we have an application process. There is a committee that interviews the applicants and chooses a team. There are four non-Rotary members. These are the young professionals. And then they are led by a Rotarian, who is the team leader.
So young professional, that means 25 to 40.
That is correct.
What kind of professions are we talking about? What kind of folks have you brought to other countries and have you seen coming from other countries?
Well, it covers the full gamut, so long as it is a generally recognized profession. That's the only requirement. We've had everything
trapeze artists.
I don't think I've experienced that, but I suppose it could be. But we've had truck farmers to nuclear physicists. Teachers, state policemen, private business owners like Guadalupe, nonprofit directors. It really covers the gamut. What we're looking for are young people who are at a point in their career where they can benefit from this month-long experience in another country, where there are very, very minimal expenses. Rotary covers everything but a medical exam, medical insurance, a passport, and a small token gift to give to their Rotarian host, because the team members are hosted by local Rotarians in the country they visit.
Let's step back for a minute. Rotary International, and we had a thing not too long ago on this show about Rotary International. It's this amazing, loose, international network of people who join Rotary who have perhaps not that much in common except a desire to give back and meet more people.
It is a service organization. Our motto is service above self. Rotary not only does programs in their local communities, but we do a great many international programs where we give money and labor to work on projects in other countries. Rotary, along with the United Nations, has almost eradicated polio. We have been the lead organization. We have given hundreds of millions of dollars over the years, and polio exists only in 4 countries now, and we've got a big push on with a matching gift from Bill Gates, and we're trying to end it in the next couple of years. But that's been the largest single Rotary project.
It's funny, everybody knows that polio has been largely eradicated. Nobody knows that Rotary has anything to do with it.
Well, until just a few years ago, it was really frowned on within Rotary to promote ourselves. It is an invitation organization, and we just didn't do press releases. We really did not tell people what we did. But a few years ago, I think everyone recognized that the public needs to know, because it's an organization that appeals to a lot of people, and it's appropriate for them to know what Rotary does.
So the program that you did last time around was an exchange with the nation of Colombia and Guadalupe Goler. You actually took a group of 3 or 4 people down to Colombia, these young professionals. What did you do there?
Well, there were 2 young men and 1 woman, also young. Joe Lewis, he's from Santa Fe. Angela Alba, who lives in Albuquerque, she's in the hotel industry. And Tomas Valdez, he's from Las Cruces, New Mexico. He's also in the hotel business. Their companies support that project, so they were 2 big companies that they came to this trip. What we did, we visited Rotary projects. They took us all over, whatever the city we went, they would take us to the key places of tourism from over there. But and also they match us with other business related to our business. It's just such a wonderful way to visit a country, because you really do it from the inside. It was fantastic.
So every host is a member of Rotary, but you try to match them. So if you have somebody, for example, who is a doctor or nurse, you might get them involved with a family that's also the medical profession.
Yes. The professional visits, they don't have to be Rotarians. The families that we will stay, they were Rotarians.
And what was it like for the students? I mean, some of these students have Spanish last names, but maybe they didn't speak fluent Spanish, and maybe some of them were just learning Spanish to go down there.
I would like to interject, they are not students.
I don't mean students, I mean participants.
Very good, thank you.
Well, the 3 of them speak reasonably enough to understand all the time most of their conversations. Of course, there were times where they were a little bit overwhelmed. We have Joe Lewis that, like I say, he lives in Santa Fe. He is in the construction business. He has his own company.
So he probably speaks Spanish.
He does speak Spanish, yes. Besides, he has studied, of course, being involved with so many people who does construction, and they are from Mexico, of course, he speaks some. But they were fine. Yeah, there are moments, like I said, that you do get a little overwhelmed. But it's part of the excitement of this trip, to be willing to do that.
So when they come back, how do they use, interpret, bring forward the experience that they had?
Well, in a couple of ways. In relationship to Rotary, we do invite each of the team members, including Guadalupe, and they give presentations about their month-long visit to Rotary clubs around our district. They can also be invited to talk to other groups, not just Rotary. But they come back and they share what they have learned and experienced. I think probably one of the biggest issues for the returning team was to share how wonderful Colombia is with New Mexicans.
Because, of course, people have some stereotypes about violence, drug cartels, and that's about it.
Absolutely.
Or maybe if they know something about music, salsa.
Exactly. When the team came from Colombia, because again, this is an exchange. When our team goes to them, their team comes to us. And when they got off the plane, the Colombian team said, our primary goal here is to share with you how wonderful our country is, and that it's not what you see on TV and radio. While that may exist in some parts of the country, that's not what our country is about. And so they spent a great deal of time sharing that with us.
Right. Well, it'd be like saying that the United States is only gangs in LA that shoot each other or something like that.
Exactly. And sometimes our media gives that one-dimensional look. And so it's wonderful for the teams to get the real word out there.
So this time the Rotary Group Study Exchange Program is going to the Philippines.
That's correct. We are taking applications now. The applications for the team members, these are the non-Rotarians between 25 and 40, those applications need to be in postmarked by September 16th. They are available. Further information, dates, application, all that sort of thing is available on our Rotary website. May I give that?
Yes.
That would be rotary5520.org. That is our district website.
And 5520.
That's correct. Okay. Rotary5520.org. And up at the top, they will see a number of links. If they click on GSE, it will take them right into the information. It's called GSE for Group Study Exchange. And all of the information is there, and as well as my phone number. I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
So do you set up the program of what you're actually going to do in Colombia and where you go and everything once you, I mean, in the Philippines or Colombia, once you have the students and know what their interests are, or do you do that beforehand? I keep saying students, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, the young professionals. Interestingly enough, here in this district, we put together the program for the incoming team, the Filipino team. The Philippine district puts together the program for the U.S. team.
Oh, that makes more sense.
And so we should know who the Philippine team members are by the end of September. And we will tell the Philippines who our team members are by the end of September. And at that point, we then begin building the program. The vocational visits are geared towards the individuals. The cultural, sightseeing, social activities, it doesn't matter who they are. Those would apply regardless of the professions. But the professional visits are not planned until we know, we get the bio for the team that is coming.
So last year's exchange, or last time's exchange, it was these New Mexicans going to Colombia, and then you had a group of Colombians come here. What did they do here?
Do you mean on a professional basis or social?
Everything, yeah.
Sightseeing, we took them everywhere. They saw our district from Deming and White Sands to Farmington and Las Vegas, with Albuquerque and Santa Fe in between. We did traditional tourist-type things that you would show your cousin if he came from New England.
Right.
The professional visits, we had one individual is the president of an energy company in Colombia, the fifth largest energy company. They met with the president of the big solar company in Albuquerque. I can't think of the name. They visited with seven other energy companies in the United States, PNM, small Jemez Electric co-ops. They visited with this whole range of energy companies so that they could compare how each do their jobs. And I understand that since then, they're actually going to be doing a cooperative project in Colombia with one of our energy company that came out of this. It was a side product we hadn't anticipated.
So that's some real connections that can be made and would not be made in any other way.
Absolutely. And we had a man who's a hotel manager, and he met with many of our hotels here and went home with a whole new computer program that would be new to Colombia. Something that he learned here, and he shared some information with our people that they learned. And so it's that give and take, exchanging and sharing ideas about how they do their jobs.
And really, I mean, obviously there are Rotarians who are putting in money and generosity and food and hospitality and so on to make these things happen. But as things go, it's a pretty efficient way of doing it. You don't have a whole lot of corporate intervention or anything like that.
Absolutely. The host families provide a private bedroom and hopefully a private bath. That's not always the case, and usually breakfast. The Rotary clubs host the lunches and dinners, and there are lots of parties. I should mention that. There are lots of parties. Guadalupe could talk about Colombia. I think they party a lot more than we do.
Well, you know,
I
Cali,
should hope so.
Yes, Cali is the capital of the salsa music, so you can imagine. I want to tell you that for me, there were two major surprises. One of them, it was how misunderstood Colombia is. What a wonderful people they are. What a happy people are. In the last 2 years, they make this... it's not a contest, but survey which country is the happiest in the world. And Colombia was number one.
Colombia's number one happiest people in the world.
Yes,
that is
yes.
So cool.
And when I was over there, I got to witness how happy they are.
What's that about? Is it just 98% salsa music?
No. You know, my trip was from all the way from Cali all the way to Medellin. Different cities, different people, constantly different people. And I make my chore to find out why they were so happy. The only thing that I can think it was, because I will ask them and they would just smile and say, well, we don't know. Because they have been in war for 50 years. And now I think every day they make the best they can of life.
Interesting.
That's what I find. Also, people talk a lot about the Colombians having the best Spanish. So I was very curious, of course, you know, my first language is Spanish. I was very curious to find out what that was about. What I noticed is they don't have different tones or different up and downs when they speak. Like, for example, some people from South America can have or different accents like in Central America or Mexico. Their Spanish is very clear. They pronounce all the letters, and it's just very easy to understand.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, Cuba is the country that probably pronounces the least letters. It's very hard to understand. I've heard that when people want to learn Spanish, Colombia is a great place to study.
I guess, you know. So anyway, that was one of the things. But also, it was a surprise, and not so much in some way, that how little people know about New Mexico. They try to, because I'm from Mexico, they were sometimes confused, like, oh, they would say, oh, we love Vicente Fernandez. And I said, well, I'm not coming, I didn't come to talk about Mexico here per se. I'm just, you know, I live in New Mexico. So that was very interesting to go over what New Mexico is about. Yes.
And if I may mention, it's just one of the funny things that came out last year. Due to the recent violence in Mexico over the drug issues, the Colombians contacted me early on, and they said, you know, we're really afraid to come, he said, because, you know, all that violence, we're just very concerned. And I said, well, no, that's old Mexico. We're in New Mexico in the
right.
U.S. But that misunderstanding was quite common, and I had inquiries from almost all of the team members regarding that specific issue.
Now, for people who want to apply for this, they just go to your website, they make an application, and presumably go through a meeting process with members of Rotary.
That's correct. The applications, again, are due by September 16th. We will be interviewing the applicants that are chosen for the interviews on the evening of September the 25th and the morning of September the 26th. And we will make the decision that day. So by the afternoon of the 26th, the team will know who has been chosen.
And when do you actually go to the Philippines?
They will go to the Philippines next year. The dates, probably within a few days, will be April the 5th to May the 5th. Those could shift a couple of days either way. We're still working with the airlines and figuring out what's possible, because it's a very long trip.
And is there any linguistic study that goes along with this?
No, we're very fortunate this year in that the Philippine district has told us that our presentations, the team will develop and put together a presentation about our district and the U.S. that they will give to Rotary clubs as they travel in the Philippines. And they have told us they will expect us to give the presentation in English, and that their members will understand, all speak English. So we're very fortunate this year that English is going to be the given language.
Now, one thing, Guadalupe, that you were saying before is that this is really a program for outgoing people.
Yes, yes. Just because the fact, like, the minute you touch the country where you visit, you have a big party that they come to see you. And you constantly have to talk about where you come from, talk about your profession. They want to know a lot about yourself and anyway, where you do. So you really have to be outgoing. You cannot be an introverted person. You have to be very outgoing, yes. And you have to be, in a good health shape.
That's what I was just going to say when you asked me about the requirements. I should have mentioned you need to be in excellent health with good stamina. It is an exhausting program because you're constantly up. You need to be up most of the time.
And going to a new place every few days.
Exactly.
Living out of your suitcase, eating new food, breathing new air.
Dancing.
Yes.
don't forget the dancing.
Don't forget, yes. I have to say they love Colombians, love to dance. And I make a promise when I was over there. I said, I'm going to go back to the United States and tell everybody what a wonderful country Colombia is and what a wonderful people they are. So if anybody has opportunity to visit Colombia, please do it.
And we'll talk to you first.
Yes, please do. Yes.
Guadalupe Goler is a member of the Santa Fe Rotary Club, and she was the leader of the trip to Colombia last year. And Donna Pedace is the district chair for the group study exchange program of Rotary International that's going to the Philippines this year. Once again, the deadline for applications is September 16th. That's coming up very soon. The website where you can find out more is rotary5520.org. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. And you can find the show archived and listen to it anytime you want at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. Thanks to Sean Conlon for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz.